Is all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Dhanamane Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Pachayane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschitadi Sitarane Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. For today we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 13. We're doing text 40, 41, and 42. There's only a purport to text 40. Begin with that. Okay. Mam bhajanti guna sarve. Nirgunam nirapekshana shakam. Suhridam priya atmanam. Samyasan kadayo guna. Mam bhajanti guna sarve. Nirgunam nirapekshakam. Suhridam priyamatmanam. Samyasan gadayo guna. Mam bhajanti guna sarve. Nirgunam nirapekshakam. Suhridam priyamatmanam. Samyasan gadayo guna.
Priya Atmanam, Suryam Priya Atmanam.
word mom.
Mom.
Me.
Bhajanti.
Serve and take shelter of.
Guna.
Guna.
Qualities.
Sarve.
All.
Nirgunam.
Free from the modes of nature.
Nirapekshakam.
Detached.
Suhridam.
The well-wisher.
Priyam.
The most dear.
Atmanam.
The super soul.
Samya.
Being equally situated everywhere.
Asanga.
Detachment.
Adaya.
And so on.
Aguna.
Free from the transformation of the material modes.
Translation purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. All superior transcendental qualities, such as being beyond the modes of nature, detached, the well-wisher, the most dear, the super soul, equally situated everywhere, and free from material entanglement. All such qualities, free from the transformations of material qualities, find their shelter and worshipable object in me. Report. Because in the previous verse, Lord Krishna explained his exalted nature, the sons of Brahma might have slightly doubted the Lord's position, thinking that they detected some pride within the Lord's mind. Therefore, they may have doubted the instructions that they had just received from Lord Hamsa. Anticipating any such reluctance, the Lord immediately clarifies the situation in the present verse. The Lord explains that unlike ordinary living entities, even up to the standard of Brahma, the Lord's transcendental body is not different from his eternal self and has no material qualities such as false egotism. The Lord's transcendental form is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, and is thus nirgunam, beyond the modes of nature. Because the Lord completely ignores the so-called enjoyment offered by the illusory energy, he is called Nirapekshakam, and being the best well-wisher of his devotees, he is called Suhridam. Priyam indicates the Lord is a supreme, lovable object, and that he establishes wonderful, affectionate relationship with his devotees. Samya indicates the Lord is neutral and detached in all material situation. These and other exalted qualities find their shelter and worshipable object in the Lord, and does not take material designations into consideration, but awards his mercy to anyone who takes shelter of him. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 1:16:26-30, Mother Bhumi, the predominating deity of the earth, gives a list of some of the Lord's transcendental qualities, and even more are found in the nectar of devotion. Actually, the Lord's qualities are unlimited, but a small sample is given here simply to establish the Lord's transcendental position. Srila Madhvacharya has quoted from the Kala Samhita as follows. The demigods are not actually perfectly endowed with transcendental qualities. Indeed, their opulences are limited, and therefore the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, who is simultaneously free from all material qualities and completely endowed with all transcendental qualities which exist in his personal body. Om Jnanatimrandasya Gnanjana Salakaya Chaksarunnitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Panchakopa Tribhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So this is a little bit complicated purport. I think the essence is fairly simple, but sometimes the way these are worded can seem a little bit difficult because there's so many different angles and perspectives of vision on this wonderful philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna, in this and previous verses, has explained his many exalted qualities. And now he's explaining that these are not material qualities. These are not a subject of false ego. There's no false ego in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's interesting how the first part of this purport mentions how that the receivers of this knowledge might have had some doubts
because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is kind of glorifying himself, talking about all of his great qualities, all of his wonderful qualities. So the question might arise, well, is this some sort of pride? But it's explained that this is not pride. This is simply who Krishna is, because Krishna and all of his qualities are non-different from him. Now, it's a little bit different from us. We have a difference between our bodies, our mind, and ourselves, the spirit soul. And so sometimes we might also boast about our abilities, or we might take some pride in our abilities, but those are usually based upon the material qualities of the mind and the body. Okay. So we might think, oh, I did really well on something. I'm able to do something nicely. I did really well on a test or whatever it might be. But these are simply qualities of the particular mind or the particular body that we have in this particular lifetime. So, you know, are they so much to boast about? Well, not really. They're material qualities we have, and certainly we want to do well at things. We want to do nicely in our service. But, you know, because of our past karma, we've gotten a certain body, we've gotten a certain mind, and we're either going to do well at things or not do well at things. So that's not really the essence, you know. The essence is really their spiritual qualities and our spiritual accomplishments and what we are able to do in the service of the Lord. Now, you notice if somebody is an advanced devotee and they're very fairly successful in developing spiritual qualities, they don't boast about it so much, do they? No. Generally, an advanced devotee remains humble. Humility is the position of the devotee. So, the advanced devotee remains very humble for two reasons. First of all, several reasons. First of all, they realize that anything that they have is given to them by the grace and the mercy of the Lord. And they also realize, we all realize, that we're very, very small and tiny in relationship to Krishna, who is everything. So we don't have so much to be proud of. So we try to remain in a humble position in relationship with Krishna. Now, Krishna is a little bit different. Krishna often maintains himself or presents himself humbly, but sometimes he doesn't, and he doesn't need to. Krishna does not need to be humble because Krishna is everything. Krishna is full in all six opulences. Krishna is the source of all material and spiritual worlds. You know, and the thing about Krishna is what's being particularly described in this verse, how Krishna's qualities are non-different than him. Krishna and his body are the same. Krishna and his qualities are the same. So, Krishna has many, many qualities which are inherent within his being. They're part of his sarup. It's described that, you know, how all of these qualities arise and are part of his sarup or his form. They're not something different or not something that manifests separately from him. Just a few of Krishna's qualities are mentioned here. Krishna has unlimited qualities, and there's a couple sources mentioned here in the verses that Lord Bhumi talks about Krishna, 1:16:26-30. Actually, in that section, those verses, 40 different wonderful qualities of Krishna are mentioned. We're not going to go through all those here. And then, of course, the nectar devotion, there's 64 qualities of Krishna. So Krishna has so many transcendental qualities, almost too many to name. In fact, they are too many to name. They say Anantashesha, with his thousands of heads, is reciting the glories of Krishna since time immemorial, and he cannot even repeat the same quality or pastime twice because Krishna is so unlimited. So this is how Krishna differs from the jiva. We are, of course, different from our bodies. Of course, we have a spiritual body that at some point we will realize. But within this material world, we are different. The spirit soul is different from the body. And Krishna is the same. Krishna is the same as his body. So we tend to view, this is hard sometimes to understand, and even here, there was some possible misunderstanding by the Brahmins of whether, why is Krishna talking about all his great qualities? Because they're inherent within him. They're part of him. Krishna couldn't even describe himself without describing these wonderful qualities. Otherwise, you know, it actually wouldn't be true. But we tend to view things from our own perspective. We view Krishna, we view the creation, not from this sort of spiritual eternal perspective, but often, you know, especially in our conditioned state, with material eyes or material vision. There's an interesting verse that describes this in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is from 10:46:41, the 10th canto. It says, just as a person who is whirling around perceives the ground to be turning, one who is affected by false ego thinks himself the doer when actually only his mind is acting. All right, let's look at this for a moment. You all experience this? You ever spun around and around, and what happens? You see that everything is whirling around and it seems like the ground is turning? Come on, you've all done that, right? You know, yeah. I don't do it. And when you get old, you don't do it so much. You know, your balance is not quite as good as when you're young. But you've all had that experience, probably. So, in other words, is the earth really turning around? At least, well, it is turning, but not like in that direction. No, that it is your mind is perceiving the world in this way. And so, this analogy is meant to present. To help us to explain Krishna's position and our own position. Actually, I'm going to give a lot of analogies today. The Srimad Bhagavatam is filled with analogies. And if you hear Srila Prabhupada's classes and his preaching, he used analogies all the time, right? What's an analogy? How about any of our teachers, any of our English teachers can tell us what an analogy is? No, we're putting everybody on the spot here. I know. Anyway, I wasn't quite clear, so I looked it up. Analogy is a comparison between two things for the purpose of explanation or clarification. We compare one thing to another. So here we're comparing, you know, the earth turning around as an analogy of a misidentification understanding of reality. So another example I was thinking of this idea is everyone's been in a car wash. You know, when you drive your car through the car, there's different kinds. One, you go on a track and it takes it through. But some of these car washes, you just drive in and then the machines kind of go past you back and forth. You've experienced this? Have you ever experienced, though, if you're just sort of looking forward and the thing starts, what do you feel like is happening? That your car is moving, right? You feel, and it gets me every time. I always, you know, not ready for it. And you feel like your car is moving forward because this machinery is moving backwards. So that's our misperception, isn't it? You know, that's part of our defective vision that the car is not actually moving. You know, so, but what do? If we look at, so we could think of this as like, you know, we're in the car, it's like, you know, the soul and the body, and we're going through, and this is the modes of material nature are coming by us, and we perceive those in a certain way. But if you notice, you get a little dizzy, and what happens? If you look right over at the wall, which is stable, then you see the reality. Then you see that that's actually moving, and you're not moving, because you have then changed your frame of reference by looking at the wall of the car wash. You all with me so far on this? Okay, so we could think of, like, that's reality. That's spiritual reality. If we have our vision, you know, fixed on what is spiritual knowledge, what is a spiritual reality, then we don't get bewildered or confused, you know, by the moving of the modes of nature and all of these things, and therefore we misapprehend what is really happening. So in that particular verse, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in his purport does similarly, first of all, he says in false ego, we think we're the doer when it's actually the mind. And also we similarly perceive that Krishna is controlling the universe personally, but it's actually carried out by material nature. And Krishna remains unaffected and aloof. So in this verse, we're hearing about how Krishna is always, you know, he is the same as his body, and he's aloof from material nature. He's not affected by false ego. He's not affected by the modes of nature. He's not affected by any of this, but yet he is still in control. So this is an important philosophical concept of how Krishna pervades everything through his energies, yet he remains the complete whole. His full transcendental qualities are always part of him. So his creative energies are not different from him, but at the same time, he's apart from those energies. And that philosophy is part of it's an aspect of what we call a Shinta Beda Tattva. This is the philosophy that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us. We can understand that we are the same as Krishna, but yet we are different than Krishna. Krishna is part of this material world, but yet he's aloof from it. He's in control of it. so many ways we can understand that Krishna is both, he's the energy and the energetic. He remains unaffected. He doesn't become lessened as he expands his energies into this material world. Another thing, Krishna is sometimes, going back to another analogy, is a spider. Now, that seemed like a strange one to me when I first saw this, comparing Krishna to a spider. I don't particularly like spiders, to be honest with you. Some of you know I'm out in the yard, in the garden, and do all my planting and everything. And I don't know if anyone's noticed that the spiders are particularly prevalent this year. I guess because of all the rain we've had, there's spider webs everywhere. And I'd say next to fire ants, they're my least favorite, living entity in the animal kingdom. But even though we may dislike spiders, with spiritual vision, we see Krishna in everything, right? In other words, often we would see this with Srila Prabhupada. You know, he'd be walking or doing something, and whatever he saw, somehow he would related to Krishna, or related to some aspect of the philosophy. What was that one when he was walking? I think it was in Paris, in a park, and he stopped at a certain point under a tree, and there was all these bird droppings, right, under the tree. Prabhupada said, what does this mean? What does this tell us? What was the answer? The birds is showing how the birds are very attached to this particular tree. And no one could figure out what he's talking about, the bird droppings on the... But Prabhupada saw it as a teaching opportunity. He saw it as an example of how things are working in the material world. So back to the spider. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.28 says, O master of all energies, please tell me philosophically all about them, those energies. You play like a spider. It covers itself by its own energy, and your determination is infallible. Prabhupada explains, by a combination of such potencies of the Lord, there is a manifestation of creation, maintenance, and annihilation in due course of time. All such agents and creative energies are emanations from the Lord, and as such, there is nothing except the Lord, or the one supreme source of different diversities. The exact example is the spider and the spider's web. The web is created by the spider and is maintained by the spider, and as soon as the spider likes, the whole thing is wound up within the spider. The spider is covered within the web. If an insignificant spider is so powerful as to act according to its will, why can't the supreme being act by his supreme will in creation, maintenance, and destruction of the cosmic manifestation? So, the spider creates the web, maintains it, and then can draw it back into itself whenever it wants. Also, you may know that everything gets caught in the spider webs. Notice that you walk into one, you can't even get the thing off of you. It's like so, and you, what to speak of little flies or bugs like that, they're finished. They get stuck in that web. But yet you see the spider can run all around on it. The spider's in control. He's not caught. So we may get caught or stuck by the modes of material nature, but Krishna does not. Krishna's in control of it, and he's aloof from it. He can just step away, walk away. We may get entangled in the web of material life, but not Krishna. So as Krishna pervades this entire universe, he never loses his identity. He never loses his spiritual body, his spiritual form, himself. Krishna says, by me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And then the example is given by Srila Prabhupada of the king. Another analogy. How the king's energy, order, his presence is everywhere throughout the kingdom in all the different departments. But he's not there. He remains a person back in his palace. Prabhupada says, just as the sunshine is spread all over the universe, the energy of the Lord is spread over the creation, and everything is resting in that energy. Yet, one should not conclude that because he's spread all over, he has lost his personal existence. For example, a king heads a government, which is a manifestation of the king's energy. The different government departments are nothing but the energies of the king, and each department is resting on the king's power. But still, one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. So in the same way, Krishna is both within the material creation, he's manifested through his energies and potencies, but yet he is also without. And the next verse, Bhagavad Gita, that was 9.4. 9.5 says, and yet, everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of the creation. So Krishna is the energetic source, and he's behind everything. This is what we do not see with our material vision. It's very difficult sometimes for us to see final causation, you know, or remote causation. Prabhupada talks about this, that even the material scientists, they go to a certain level of causation. This is caused by this, this is because of this, but what's behind it all? Another analogy, look at the light bulb up there. Is the light is coming out of the light bulb, right? We can all see it. Is the energy coming from the light bulb, really? Is the light bulb creating the energy that is giving off light? No. There's a wire, an electrical wire, and it's going up through the ceiling and it goes out to the pole or whatever, and the pole goes back eventually to a powerhouse. So that powerhouse is generating electricity. We see it manifesting here. So we see so many incredible, wonderful things in this material world. But they are just the manifestations of that ultimate energy coming from the ultimate powerhouse of Krishna. So Krishna controls material nature like from a distance. He's aloof. And this is an important concept for us to understand. So, how do we understand these things? How do we understand the spiritual world, spiritual nature, because our minds, our intelligence are material? Right now, our vision is covered by Krishna's own potency. Here's an example, another analogy. Clouds. Clouds are, in one sense, can be said to be a creation of the energy of the sun. Why is that? How is the cloud formed? The sun comes down on a body of water, an ocean, a lake, whatever, right? And it evaporates the water, and that evaporated water, it becomes a cloud. Am I saying this right? You know, you science teachers can correct me. Anyway, something like that happens. You know, anyway, there's an evaporation process, goes up in the air, you got a cloud there, so it's created by the sun. Now, if you have a very cloudy day, do you see the sun? No. Why? Because the sun is covered by the cloud. The sun has not gone away, but you can't see it. But it's been covered by its own energy in the creation of that cloud. Now, sometimes what happens on a cloudy day, or sometimes on a very foggy day, similar thing, very foggy, what happens? The sun comes out, it dissipates the fog or dissipates the cloud, and the sun reveals itself to us. So in the same way, as Krishna covers our vision in this material world by Maya, by material energy, Krishna can also dissipate or lift that cloud of Maya and reveal himself to us. So how does that happen? It happens by Krishna's mercy. It is only by the mercy of the Lord that we can understand him and see him and perceive him. But fortunately, it's not just random luck. There's a process by which we can gain the mercy of Krishna that's given to us by Srila Prabhupada, the acharyas, the spiritual masters, and that's simply the process of bhakti, of devotional service, bhakti yoga, hearing and chanting the glories of Krishna. Through that process, we become purified and we become qualified to understand Krishna so that Krishna will lift that curtain of Maya, that cloud of Maya, and reveal himself to us. Bhagavad Gita 18.55 says, Bhakti mam avjanadvan yaschasmi tatvata tito mam tatvato gyatva vishate tadanantara. One can understand me as I am, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. And a couple of verses earlier, 1152, Srila Prabhupada says in his purport, Krishna is covered by his yogamaya potency. He is not to be seen or revealed to anyone and everyone. Only by one to whom he reveals himself can he be seen. the transcendentalist by continuous Krishna consciousness and by devotional service to Krishna can have his spiritual eyes open and can see Krishna by revelation. Revelation means Krishna revealing himself to us, which can be done very easily. Fortunately, in this Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us this very, very easy and wonderful process of the chanting of the holy name. And through that process of chanting the holy name, Krishna sees the sincerity in the heart of his devotees, purifies us, and reveals himself to us so that we can understand these things very simply. How Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how he is the same as his transcendental form. Krishna is non-different than his qualities, his form, his activities, his name. And all of this can be easily understood for one who takes up the process of bhakti. Okay? I think we're at the point where the kids are getting restless. Is that there? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Any discussion, thoughts, questions? Oh, hands up in the back. Rimiya Prabhu.
I was just wondering if you could explain, does Krishna actually personally then get involved with the modes of material nature for a devotee, and at what point does that happen?
Okay, so we're saying how Krishna is aloof from the modes of nature, and you're asking for a devotee, does Krishna get involved?
Yes.
Yes, but it's not in the same way. You know, obviously Krishna is involved in a devotee's life. A devotee is involved with Krishna. There's a relationship. And those are some of the qualities that are actually mentioned in this verse, how Krishna is the protector of his devotees, how he's very merciful to his devotees. So yes, Krishna can intercede in the lives of his devotees, but it is actually the spiritual energy working. We'd say for a devotee, it's not really the same. It's not ordinary karmic workings or interacting with the modes of nature. Although obviously we are here in material bodies, you know, and certainly Krishna, in one sense, does work within the scheme of the material energy in the material world for his devotees. But it's actually an intercession. That's my understanding, at least. It's actually a spiritual energy. You know, of course, all of Krishna's energies are spiritual. From the other perspective, we say he has material energies, spiritual energies, but in another sense, they're all different transformations of Krishna's own energy. What was it again?
At what point does the Krishna start?
Okay. So when does that happen? When one becomes a devotee of the Lord. And my understanding from how Srila Prabhupada explained this is when one takes up the order of the spiritual master. When one is following the order of the spiritual master, one is actually within the internal energy, the spiritual energy of the Lord, no longer in the external energy. And therefore, everything is happening through Krishna's arrangement. So for us, the order of the spiritual master, you know, generally means when one is following the principles, chanting, etc., under the guidance of the spiritual master, then Krishna directly intercedes from the perspective or of spiritual energy. Of course, you know, for all devotees, he does to a certain degree, but if one is firmly situated under the order of Guru, then one is fully situated in that position. Is it Vayatrivakram and then Vrangavind? Was anyone on the ladies' side I'm missing? Okay, yeah.
So I'll give you a quick pastime with me and the spiders. When I just came to this country, I heard about the Black Widow. At that time, I used to practice martial arts a little serious. So I used to practice my speed. And when I see the Black Widow, I would grab them. Sometimes three, four of them, I would just grab them and squeeze them like that. You know, practicing speed on them. But you know, maybe it was dangerous. Coming to the scientists, from our definition of learning about God, understanding God, there is no way that they can able to there is no way they can come to understand God through their scientific process, like their testing and this and that. It's not possible, right? Because you want to say something on that?
I'm not sure. Was there a question there? I didn't understand the Black Widows and the... Anyway. Forget the Black Widows, okay. Right.
It's not possible.
No, of course. Yeah, that's a whole other class. But yes, we are not going to understand the spiritual world through material processes. Absolutely. Pranagavinder?
It seems like the sloka says that the doubt has to be destroyed, then the real excellent service of glorification of the Lord will take place. But doubt is an obstacle on the way to surrender, or even though we don't say I have a doubt, but then why I'm not surrendered? Because I have a doubt, but I don't say it, or I don't analytically.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. So it seems like we have to cultivate devotion to remove the doubt, and then will be excellence service. Or doubt has to go first, then...
It probably works both ways, doesn't it, to some degree. But generally, I think doubts are taken away by Krishna through devotional service. I think that's what you were indicating, right, in the beginning. Because we see that when people come to Krishna consciousness, we see people come with all kinds of doubts. And quite, like you said, we still maintain some doubt, otherwise we'd be pure devotees, probably. But we see that more graphically when sometimes when new people come, and they have so many questions and so many doubts, and eventually, through the purification process of bhakti, those doubts are removed. Quick story. We had one young man who, you know, when I was in the Potomac Temple, this is back in the 70s, and he came every Sunday, and he came with his Tupperware containers, you know, and loaded up at the Sunday feast, you know, and had his basically prasadam for the week. But the problem with him is, I think he thought he was a Buddhist or something. He was the most argumentative person we'd ever seen. In fact, we all just got tired of talking to him. Argue, every point of philosophy, question everything. You know, everything was just an argument. You know, he didn't accept anything, you know. And so this went on and on, and I think, let's see, El Rupanuga Prabhu was there. He was a GBC at the time, and I think he was the temple president. And we said, in this guy, all he comes to is causes trouble, and he just takes loads of prasadam, free prasadam, you know, and never gives anything. And Rupanuga said, it's okay, he's getting purified by taking prasadam, you know. So he would, and finally, I guess he ran out of doubts. He ran out of questions. Finally, okay, I don't have anything more. They keep defeating everything. They keep explaining everything. And, of course, he's becoming purified by coming to temple, associating with devotees, hearing the kirtan, and taking an incredible amount of prasadam. You know, so eventually he moved in, became a brahmachari. You know, but, you know, there, you know, through devotional service, association with devotees, I think that's another really important factor here. The doubts were finally removed. Yeah. I don't think he was conscious saying, oh, I really want to remove my doubts. No, he was like cultivating, you know, his doubts practically. But Krishna took them away. Yeah. She probably in there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Anyway.